Welcome to the audio guide for the Miracle Nutrition River Tour and the Miracle Nutrition Walking Tour of Clifton, New Jersey, and the Miracle Nutrition Unintentional Museum of Everything Everywhere guided audio tour. Now, that last is a museum I've just opened. I have opened a museum called the Unintentional Museum of Everything Everywhere. Where is it, Hardy? I want to come visit it. It isn't in any specific place. In fact, it's not an actual museum as much as it's a series of audio tours for museums. Where could they be? The museum can be anywhere. I was inspired by these ironically named self-guided tours they have in museums. And just, it's not really self-guided at all. It's guided by a mysterious voice and a plastic wand that you hold to your ear. And as you walk around to the paintings and you look at them, it says to you in your head, it'll say, "Notice this is a painting of a man. Notice the paint." And everything. And you'll say, "Oh, look at that. I wouldn't have thought of that. I'm being self-guided." But you're not being self-guided. You're being self-guided in the way that somebody who listens to AM radio is think that their politics is self-guided. "Yep, I'm independent." No, it's something in your ear telling you what to think and do. Well, I thought, hey, I could be that. You could hold me up to your ear and we could walk around and look at things and talk about them together, just you and I. How about that? And then you're self-guided. I imagine it'd be good at parties or something. I'm just going to put these earplugs in. I don't want to talk to anybody, but I have my Hardy White will self-guide me. Hey, look at this character over here. Where'd he get that shirt? At a place called the 70s Kiana Shirt Emporium? Oh, that'd be beautiful. I'd love that. There was a type of shirt in the 70s called Kiana Silk, and they somehow found technology to print like old photographs and things on your shirt, on your silky-looking shirt. And say, "Hey, is that that's an old Model T on your shirt there. You're looking snazzy." And they would say that too in the 70s. "Are you from the 1870s or the 1970s? When are you from, Hardy?" "Oh, I'm from all over because of the time travel and everything. And I like to integrate that into my audio programs. A lot of this is just sitting in the studio going, you know, look to your right." Like that, I got to say it a whole bunch of different times and different voices. And the studio work is tedious, but I do it for you because I want it to have that feeling of spontaneity. So when you come across a statue, say, "I wonder if Hardy knows that I'm in front of a statue right now. I wonder if the audio tour is that synced. How does the technology work that he'd know where I am?" I say, "I'll just take a guess. I'm just guessing that you're standing near a wall. I don't know how close the wall is, but I know that if you're a human being, you're walking around, there's a wall close. Because we like our walls and we like to keep them close. And I know that's around. Maybe there's other people around. Because that happens too. People are like magnets or drops of water or something. They want to congeal, don't they? People are like lint. You use lint to get lint. Were you ever taught that when you're taking the cleaning the dryer filter? So they use the lint to get the lint. And that's how they came up with the idea for the show, To Catch a Thief. It was called To Get Lint with something else that's also lint, a like thing. You say, "Well, what would make that interesting? Let's make him a killer." That's a little too much. Oh, what are we looking at now? Put it up to your ear. Put it up to both of your ears. Oh, and we're safe in here now. I'm in your head with you. Oh, it's cozy and comfy in here. The head is like, the human head to me is like a pillow fort, or one of like a blanket fort that you make on a rainy day. It is the last resort, isn't it, in there? The world can happen to you outside, but it's just in your head. It's just you and me. And me, you've invited me in. So I'm just going to let me show you around your own head. That's terrible. I wouldn't deign to do that? I guess because the Danish would do that. They would walk right in and go, "Let me show you around your own place." Don't do that. I wonder if that's a service. They'll give you tours of your own house. "Did you ever look in this closet?" "No, don't go in there." "Let's look in it together." "Don't, though. Oh, why'd you put chicken bones in here?" "Oh, my friend, I can't help you clean the chicken bones out of your closet, but I can tell you where chicken bone closet is, maybe. It's the one, follow your nose. That's what it'll tell you. Now, what form should I put these audiobooks in?" I'm thinking a radio would be handy for people. They could just walk around with their radio to their ear. When I was a young man, radios came in little boxes. And then you take it out of the box, and the radio itself was a box. So this is intriguing. It's like nesting dolls. But that was it. Don't further open it, because then there's just baffling circuitry. But you'd have these, what they call transitional radios, and they were a little box. Sometimes they were covered with leather. Isn't that neat? It was wearing some sort of leather halter, specially made for it, to protect the radio. And sometimes you'd take it out of its little leather case, and you'd see a little silicon desiccant living there. That's a people. And I had this radio, and it'd get AM, FM, we had all sorts of other ones back then, shortwave and everything. You'd listen. Were there shortwave radio shows? Hello, welcome. I'm sure there's two of you listening. Shortwave, if you've ever eavesdropped on it, is like listening to radio because people don't go back and forth. They'll talk in a long spiel, like a monologue, and then the other person will talk. So I used to have a shortwave receiver, and I would listen in on their conversations. And there was a fella talking about, yes, I just come from Las Vegas, and he described the buffet. And there was a buffet, it had roast beef, and it also had melon, and he went on and on and on. It was beautiful, and I listened to it like music, you know? And I was like, how far away, where are these people? I love it. And people do like to eavesdrop on the mundane, don't they? They just like to, sometimes I just want to listen to the ordinary as a sort of music. Right, especially when people aren't being angry. Now, that's the thing where radio and TV say, oh, I'm listening to them at a height of emotion that I can't take. You know what I never enjoyed is TV shows about emergency rooms. It's like, oh, my word. I'm just going to go get the Pepto-Bismol right now because I know this is going to give me very loose stools out of anxiety. I'm just watching people, oh, is it going to be okay? I know I have to experience that periodically. I don't want to have to, as entertainment, I can't take it. It's just me. I think it's wonderful. George Clooney and all. I know I'm talking, that was 30 years ago or whatever. But everybody, I think it's wonderful. I'm just talking for me. It's very personal for me. So a lot of those things, just I guess I'm a sensitive person. That's terrible. They say don't be like that. You're no good on a hunting trip or a war party. I know I'm useless. I'm not trying to, and I know we need all types of people, don't we? Gentle people, brutal, horrible psychopaths and everything. We need them all. And I wouldn't eliminate anybody from the great, is it a great plan? No, it's a wonderful jumble. But if you take anything out, then it's less cool, I guess. It's like a Jackson Pollock painting. I think you'd miss that splatter if it wasn't there. And that's how I feel like I am, a paint splatter to you. Oh, my friend, what's that, a blank canvas? Let me throw myself on it for you. What are we looking at now? Let's look up. Oh, I know. Let's look up. Do we see the sky or do we see a roof? I wonder. We're seeing it together, though. That's what's so good. Shared misery, shared joy. Isn't it a little... you say shared joy. I want all the joy for myself and I want to share the misery. For instance, I'm not going to eat all this cream corn. You want some? You know, but notice that I'm not going to eat all this filet. Also, I'm a vegan. Do you want some? No one says that. No, they do. Hang on. Get your own analogy. I don't know what your life is like, what your reality is like. It's hard to speak for you, but I can speak with you. I hope I can keep you company. I want to be also a stowaway. That's another thing it's like having in your ear. If you're sitting somewhere right now, let's say you're in, I don't know if you're on the subway or you're in church or funeral service, and you got your earbuds in. Now, I don't know the origin of that word, whether it's like a flower bud or your friend. It's my earbud. He's my little friend in my head. Or whether it's going to like, these are my earbuds and they're going to grow into proper ears. But right now, they're convenient. I can get them in my own ears when they actually full flower into ears. Ew. Now, the ones that don't open up are called bullets. I learned that from working at an ear florist. I'm in your head, a little stowaway. Like having a little mouse, cartoon mouse on your shoulder.
Are we at a funeral?
Yeah, man.
Who died?
Oh, a friend of a friend.
Then why are we here?
Well, we're helping out the friend.
Which friend?
The first friend. The friend, not the friend of a friend who died. We don't know the decedent.
Deceased?
Deceased, whatever. I'm here for my friend to support him.
Oh, what are they doing now?
They're talking about the dead person.
Why?
Because they want to remember all the things about them.
Oh, like all the bad things they did?
No, mainly just, you know, who they were, like a distorted but nice, you know, view of who they were, so they can remember all the good things.
Oh, what are they doing now?
They're still doing that, and they're going to do it for a while.
Is that the dead guy?
In the box?
Yeah.
Yep, in front.
Yeah. Does he do anything?
No, he's dead.
All right. You want to do 20 questions or something?
No, I don't know. Maybe, I feel like maybe just sitting here watching this. Maybe I don't even need a distraction. It's hard to say. It's like if 20 questions is going to make it better, then how maybe maybe I'm not bored after all. Right?
Yeah, I guess so. Do you mind if I read?
No, go ahead, man. I like just hanging out. It's fine. You can just sit there on my shoulder and read for a while. You don't have to have it. There doesn't have to be a running commentary of everything I do.
Well, then why even have a shoulder mouse friend?
Indeed, why even have a shoulder mouse friend? I am on a self-guided tour. We all think this, don't we, as we hold that wand to our ear and listen to the things that are being told to us about this painting? This painting in front of you was painted in the year 1926. And you believe them? No, because it's usually, why would they lie about that? It was really 1927 and they're trying to cover something up. Oh, some of you have to believe it. Some of it, what's in your head, I guess, is true. I don't know of any way of verifying it, though. I suppose read. I like generic solutions like that to things. Read. Vote. Oh, my goodness. Read Mein Kampf. Vote for Hitler. Don't do that. So I'll tell you what, use your reason, but also your heart. Now, the ancient Egyptians, when they would perish, they would take out all the parts of the body. They would take out the heart, the liver, the spleen, the zygoglossator and everything, because they had different organs back then. And they would put them in clay jars. And they would also take out the brain. What would they do with the brain? You'd say they'd do nothing. They'd waste it. They'd put a crochet hook in the nose and they'd mush it around and turn the brain to a sort of cotton candy, and then they'd take it out the nose and it'd be all wrapped around the crochet hook, and they'd laugh because they were macabre, the brain removers of ancient Egypt. And I don't know what they'd do with it. They'd flick it. I guess they'd flick it onto the wall and somebody'd go, oh my, that's awful. But they didn't save it because they didn't think that it was the seat of anything, of reason or anything like that. We now know that old Egyptian mummy brains, in fact, were all the thinking, when all that we know now was actually thought in those old brains. Our brains now, of course, no longer do anything. But they realized that if they mixed them with the heart mixture in the mason jar, if they mixed it up, then they stumbled on something. You see what I'm saying? Like salami and cream cheese or something. Say, what is that? Together. See, alone it's nothing. But together, it's a sort of amuse-bouche. And so that's why we like to combine all our elements. Moving on to the next painting. Whoa, look, it's huge. Look at that. Oh, my goodness. This is what I like to do these little things, and you can do this at work. I'll have a little challenge for you. Find a reason to cup your right buttocks with your right hand and then your left buttocks with your left hand, but do it so surreptitiously it looks like you're make a reason to do it. Like, you know, oh, I'm looking for my wallet or something. Then do that. And nobody will know. So I just touch my butt. And it's fun to do. It helps you pass the time at work or whatever on a subway. Don't do it on a subway, because many people might think that you want them to see you doing it or something like that. Give people their room. I would say, you know, those dividers are cubbies. Things are kind of demeaning at work. You know what I'm saying? They're not really offices.
You know, they're just little dividers. But they would be nice on public transportation. Sit down and say, oh, I got my own little room. It feels very private. I don't know if they could do that for people. Probably little stalls. What if riding on the subway was exactly like just sitting in a public restroom? You close the little door, you go, ugh, it's awful in here, but at least it's private. It's a private room with awful scrawling and everything on the wall and stains and everything. Oh, other people, look at the evidence for them. You know, I was thinking the other day, if dinosaurs wore pants and paper hats, we would never know it. The thing that we see left of dinosaurs now, the bones, they're not really even the bones, are they? They're stone that became their bones sat in one place so long that stone took its place. Like Pompeii, people made of ash. That's not really the Pompeii people going, ah! That's just the ash that's left in the place of where the void where the Pompeii person was. And that's the same with dinosaur bones. So all the soft things are gone. All their flesh is gone. All their hats. Maybe they wore elaborate hats to church and everything. All gone. All their clothes are gone. All their little items. Some of the dinosaurs made beautiful, like what the shakers make now. What's that? Wooden pegs to keep your clothes on and everything. Is that a shaker item? It really is. And they'd hang other things on pegs, like, let's get this chair out of the way. We'll hang it on the wall on a peg. That's shaker. Or dinosaur. We don't really know. It's been lost. But a lot of things, see, if they don't leave evidence, how do we know? Oh, and what are the other remains? I know a guy who's he's a type of paleontologist, but instead of bones, gets money out of other people's pockets. I guess he's not a paleontologist, but I guess that's a thief. I guess really he's a pickpocket. But, you know, I think it's similar in so many ways. Oh, where are we going? I'm glad I'm not one of those direction services. They're interesting. They know where you are all the time. Turn right here. Take a U-turn now. How do you know I'm not going a special other way? Well, then why you need me? Are airplane navigators nags like that? Do pilots say, quit hectoring me. Turn left, fly left here. We're trying to get to Virginia Airport. No, I know where I'm going. Navigator. And I don't even think they have them anymore. I've seen now cockpits, they just have two. They go, forget the navigator. It's just the two pilots now. It turns out we didn't even need that guy. That's where the union's letting them down. So navigators are like, we were important. Because a lot of times we were comic relief. I would lean over and quip or something. And I remember when we could smoke in the cockpit. We would smoke and drink and everything and fly planes. That was back in the day. Oh, things are so different now. Are they better or worse, Hardy? Oh, I'm glad it's not up to me to decide whether things are better or worse. Oh, they don't come to me. I'm not a judge. If I was a judge, what would I wear under those robes? I'd wear a kilt. And what would you wear under the kilt? I'd come and find you in a plane. I'm getting Runaway Bunny mixed up with my logic for what I would wear under a robe. That happens sometimes. Oh, as you get older, young people, let me tell you something about your brain. Oh, you're going to need some kind of a booklet or something to figure out how it works. As you get older, you will become more and more aware that there is a device in your head that is doing the thinking, and that it's not running as smoothly as it was when you were younger. And you don't even remember what that age is, too. You've forgotten it. It's like old computer. The brain is exactly like a computer. It's so much like a computer, in my opinion, that it's frightening. I don't even feel like an individual sometimes. I feel like an individual computer, like my old computer. I look at it and go, oh, Bessie, or something, right? But I realize it's just like one of many of the types of computers that was made. Isn't that interesting? Don't know. Do something, Hardy. We're losing him. I wish sometimes that the person I was talking to was hooked up to devices so I could see what things I said were resonating with them, what things I said they thought were true or had some meaning for them, Oh, we spend a lot of time analyzing other people to see, do they like us, trying to get cues from them. Am I liked? Am I accepted? Oh, no one wants to be alone, do they? No one wants to be loathed and hated. It can happen so fast. You can be on top of the world. I'm the biggest celebrity that ever was. This happened to Festus. No, it didn't. Who did it happen to? I'm sure it's happened to people. We're famous one minute, and then the next minute they're reviled even. Oh, so you have to know yourself. So I'm no different a person. I've just, my heinous crimes have been found out, but I'm essentially the same person right now. And I'm still Ken, what's his name? Who played Festus? Ken. Don't yell it out. Then I can't think of it. It's no fun for me. It's not a puzzle. That's not right. Oh, my goodness. We like to be able to figure out. Don't fill in things with me. If I forget stuff, let me forget it. I like being in this state of knowing and not knowing. It's exquisite. It's beautiful. That balance between, you know, I can't quite remember that name, and I know it's in there. Ah, that's a beautiful place to be for me. Because the minute I think that I know the answer, I think I stop looking. And if I stop looking, then I break the rule number one of the unintentional museum of everything everywhere. And that is, anything can be an exhibit. I'm looking out over there. Look at this guy. Is he an exhibit? Yes, he's in the zoo here. Oh, it's a free-range zoo, isn't it? Yes. Oh, he's a wonderful, magnificent-looking specimen of somebody who looks like a Dan Clowes cartoon. Yes, he's going to his job at vending. What's he vending? He's just vending, 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 vending. Wow, I can tell he does that, because look at his hands. Sherlock Holmes could look at a person and tell what they do for a living. He'd look at you and he'd say, you work you work with tar. And they'd say, yeah, how did you know? And you go, come on, let's do something harder. Okay, you're an actuary. Oh, how did you know? Because I just 10 minutes with you, and I knew you were actuary. First of all, you told me early in the conversation. Second of all, though, it does matter. Looking at people's fingernails and everything, you can get clues with what, like, if they work with clay and you look under their fingernails, you can tell what kind of clay they work with. Oh, you thought I meant clay pigeon or somebody. No, not the person. I meant the, oh, that's so funny, though. A lot of people do have different things. So, oh, I work with Heather. The plant? See, isn't that neat? And yet it's also a person's name. Confusion can lead to so many wonderful things. It can lead to so much hatred and war, and yet it can also lead to giggles, can't it? It can. Oh, I wish it only led to giggles. If there was a misunderstanding on a global scale, two nations misunderstand each other, and they just go into absolute hysterics. And then every time they recall it, they start laughing all over again. Isn't that joyous? Oh, I wish that were the case, instead of wanting to destroy one another. I wish I could reach out to my brothers and sisters and say to you, like the little book, Are You My Mother? Say, Are You My Brother? Sister? Oh, that's a new book. Oh, I just wrote a children's book. Are You My Brother? Sister? By Hardy White. A little baby bird fell out of the nest and hurt its head. On the way to the bird hospital, I have to take a drink of water. Who's that talking? That's the doctor. I can't operate on this bird. This bird is my son. But the father is with the... Oh, I'm being sexist. The bird surgeon is his mother. Is it getting too confusing for the young children? First of all, there's going to be pictures. So that should make up for a lot of the deficit in the story, I think. Anyway, the little bird drops out of the nest and it doesn't know who its family is anymore. It's become disconnected from the past. It no longer realizes its humanity. Well, it's not a human, it's a bird, but it represents humanity. And it's wandering around saying to everything, Are you my brother, sister? Are you my brother, sister? And all the things it meets going, no, I'm not related to you at all. I'm not your brother or sister, your mother, your father. We are all alienated from one another. I disavow you. I said, but I'm not trying to get anything from the will. All right, well then, what do I need you for? What do we need one another for? I recently had a family get-together picnic, and I have no family. So it was just me grilling hamburgers on my little grill and everything. But I was thinking to myself, now if I did have a fam, if they were still alive, why are they all dead? Did they die in a tragedy? Yes, a tragedy called living life till you got old. I came in, my family was really aged by the time I got into it. So I'm lovely being into a big family. And largely they were all old people, and they eventually perished. So what about your younger cousins? Oh, well, you know, you drift away, too. You lose people. You don't even recognize. I would not even recognize them if I bumped into them at the family reunion. They had a sign on them that said, I am Hardy's cousin. Do you remember me? And there's a picture of us together. And then there's a handwritten note from me a couple of years ago saying, yes, I verify that I do remember you and you are my family member. I would still say I have no idea who you are. Really, are you Michael's child? You look so much different. But I don't have that. But, you know, you can make a sort of family out of Sculpey and then put them around. Say, oh, it takes a long time if you make them life-size, and don't, because it gets heavier and heavier and heavier. What could you make your family out of? First, definitely make the heads out of gourds, empty gourds. I've said that so many times on the show that I think people are starting to start. If they made T-shirts... Sometimes I think, what if I was popular and something I just said offhand every once in a while became a popular T-shirt? That'd be so exciting. It's not that way, though. The way is that we have conversations, and I have no recollection of that, Hardy. I'm pretty sure I said that. But that's good, too. Do you want people to remember everything you said? Sometimes I think about famous novelists, and I think, oh, what have they done? Boy, you have somebody on talk show say, did you or did you not say this? I guess I did. There it is in print with my name on it. Oh, I disavow. I'm like Mission Impossible. I disavow that I made some recording that goes up in smoke. Very dangerous, first of all. We had those in the 80s, 70s, really. They're called 8-tracks. And you'd play them once, and they'd say, you know, here's that John Lennon album. And then it disavows any knowledge of your that you've purchased that music. A-track tapes would flip, and they would play you the ghost version of songs, which was beautiful things, unintentional. If you are that type of person, surrealist Dada kind of intention, if you like unintentional art or something like found poetry and everything, you should live life. Sometime, because boy, just things like that happen all the time. You say, all this noise, is this a cacophony or a symphony of strange sounds? Sometimes there's so much organization in everything and patterns in people's lives that they seek out art that intentionally disrupts that. Say, I'm going to go see somebody beat a trash can lid and scream for a while because I got to get some of these jingles out of my head. I need things to get scrambled up a bit so I can put them back together. We've all seen the Lego movie. A fella glues the Legos together. That's no good. That violates the use of the blocks. They're building blocks. And the building is an active verb. The preacher stood before the congregation and looked out at them. He approached the pulpit and put his hands on it. The minute he did this, he realized that his hands were in fact stuck now to the lectern surface. Someone had cleaned the lectern surface with an inexplicably sticky substance, and now his hands were glued to it. Shall I raise my hands? Shall I attempt to raise my hands? He said. Perhaps I can use it as some sort of trick and fool the congregation into thinking that I can levitate objects now with my hands. Perhaps I should make it into a lesson. Sometimes we glue our hands to the lectern. He looked out silently to the congregation, and he began to speak. Brothers and sisters, he said, who put this... He began to cuss about the glue and everything, and when he did, he started to gesture, and he realized that his hands weren't glued to the surface. That in fact he was hallucinating, and it felt like they were, and he couldn't lift them and everything. I don't know why I was hallucinating. I didn't get to that part. but sometimes that'll happen, especially to clergy. They begin to have identity crisis. Who am I? Why am I telling you these things? Why do I deserve to stand before you like that? I'm so full of sin. Why am I the one telling you how to be moral or something? Oh, my life is much easier. I realized a long time ago I took my moral cues from a fellow who used to take tickets at the old movie theater in my hometown. He'd say, oh, what old movie are you seeing this evening? Oh, that's a good one. Like that. I never knew what he stood for. Now, he could have been a horrible, evil person. But see, where I saw him doing, I saw him doing nothing wrong. He's just taking tickets and everything and making comments about movies. And that was wonderful. Perhaps we need to be put in positions where we can't mess things up that badly. Isn't that, you could take the most awful person and you just put him in some kind of benign situation. They can be fine, right? You just access. I think sometimes that's it. You know? I shouldn't have access to an angry guerrilla army. I've found that out from time traveling. Because you think, oh, I'll be a good king to the guerrilla army. And then, oh, no. When I was a little boy, I had some stuffed animals, like all little boys. But because I think I was a little bit psychotic, psychopath or something, I imagined myself the emperor of them, the lord of them. I guess I felt maybe I've had, you know, issues or something. Control. So I can't control anything in my life. I won't control my teddy bears. All right. So I made myself king over all the stuffed animals in my room. And I had lots of them. And they did have a rank. You know, the ones that were pretty, that looked like real things and everything, I'd have more compassion for them, the ones that were well made. Then there's the crummy ones that they smell like cornflakes and you don't know what kind of animal it is or something. Or maybe it isn't an animal at all. Ooh. You know, it's just some kind of little mascot to a bad hamburger chain or something. You say, oh, that's real low in the kingdom. I'm sorry to have a caste system, but you're not. You don't have the same status. I mean, we do that with animals, too. You know who we give priority to? Charismatic megafauna. Yes, I'm not going to eat an elephant. Look at its pretty elephant face because it's charismatic megafauna. But look at poor lowly crab or the crab lizard. We don't eat lizard. Why not, though? Just, ugh. It isn't a mount. It isn't like, oh, I think a lizard looks like a child. It's like, oh, it'll be inside me. And that will happen. That's why we don't eat reptiles. Hey, children, if you eat reptiles, the reptile can grow inside you. Any little piece of the reptile can regenerate. So if you eat a little bit of alligator tail, alligator starts growing in you. That's how I grew up, hearing that old tale. Do you remember that? A lot of, and also English folk tales say there's a giant that's going to come out of the north and he's got 7-league boots and he captures all the children and he makes them into food. Really? And then what happens? And he steals all the parents' animals. Well, I'm okay there because I know my parents don't really have any animals except for the poodle. All right. Well, the giant's going to eat that or something. They were really warning. They're ancient warnings against Napoleon and all. If you look back, because they want, if I can keep the children in a constant state of fear, then I believe I can perpetuate the current political system. And sometimes that's important. Oh, put it up to your ear. The wand, the plastic wand? Yes, people think, where'd you get that vintage 80s cell phone? It's not. It's a self-guided tour wand from Hardy White Miracle Nutrition. I'm going around life listening to it. And it's telling me what to do. Oh, so you're self-guided. I am indeed self-guided. Hardy's telling me what to do. You don't see any contradiction there? Nope. None. Well, there isn't really a contradiction there. Because when we guide ourselves, we need material from elsewhere. No man is an island. You didn't just get here and invent something. Oh, if everybody had to invent their own language. That's what Tolkien thought. He got here as a young person and he thought he didn't know there was one language here already. He goes, well, I better, an amigo vaden, that's better. So no, you don't have to invent your own language, Tolkien. We have languages. Oh, I'm already up to 3. No. We have some. You can use the ones that are here. So I think a lot of people thought, oh, I have to invent everything from scratch. No, use what's here. But a lot of the institutions that are already here, like the post office or churches, maybe they're not,
who knows what's happened over the years, whether it could they could be broken inside, and we're using broken things on one another. Sometimes I think that our religious institutions are like a tube of antibacterial cream. They say, well, look at the date on it. What's the date say?
It says medieval.
What's it say?
It says expires 1020.
No way.
Really?
Thousands of years ago.
Yep.
Well, what? We're still using it.
Yep.
So it's just an imaginary bomb.
It's an imaginary bomb that we rub on our wounds and we think they're going to heal them. And you know what really secretly does?
What? Time. Time heals them?
Time's healing our wounds, not the cream. Not the magic cream. The magic cream expired a long time ago. Was there ever a drug in it that worked? Who knows, but it's expired. The half-life of drugs.
Mine's wearing off. I got to take a little break. I'll be right back. I've got to get some fresh drugs. This is not true. Well, it's true in that I got a cup of coffee here. And this is what's awful. This is how I know coffee's a drug. I wake up the same time every morning going, I got to have my special drug. It's worn off. And I need it or my heart will stop or something. I really feel like that. Hotels know this, too. They go, we got your drug. We got you set up. I have to take a sip of it even now. I rarely do that. I can speak to you without sipping or anything. But why are you so parched, Hardy? What's wrong with that? I don't know. I'm just now realizing the hotels are all pushing a drug on us. I'm glad they didn't have other drugs. Here's a cup of pills with some cellophane on it. Help yourself. No thanks. I'm good. Who knows whether they're... Let's go through all the other drugs. That'd be funny. Then it's a stand-up routine, and that's not... You know that's not me. I don't want to stand up. That's one thing. I don't want to see... I love talking to people, but I don't want to... Not when they're little round two-top tables. You know? I don't want to talk to you like that. Sit in the proper pews or something like that. If you see, you're waiting to be... I feel like if you're sitting at a table and I'm talking to you and you're sitting at some place where there's like they serve... Someone's going to bring food or drinks to you. I feel like I'm just another food or drink. I feel like I've been commodified or something. I'm a big basket of French fries for you. And I don't see that's what we're doing. I never like to talk to people like that. Sometimes I will. Sometimes I'll go in like a breakfast place. I say, I'm just going, you know what? I'm going to go into Bob Evans and preach. No, they don't want you to do that. They should have the open mic. Hear me out. Open mic pancake. Open mic pancake. Am I saying this right? Pancake House open mic mornings. Where you get up and you can preach.
Oh, Lord of the religious people.
Whatever. There's a time limit. I can take it. And they can't censor you. You can't. Don't say anything nasty, awful, or anything. But it can be any religion. That's good. So, you know, say, oh, I know what I'm going to hear, blah, blah, blah. But you get up there and just say anything. That'd be wonderful. Wouldn't it be fun? So I'm going to go, wow, it gets really entertaining at the Pancake House open mic preaching. People, all sorts of atheists, theists, bi-theists, people, all sorts of combinations of gods they believe in, all sorts of characters. I'm just telling you, it'd be wonderful. Some people cosplay, and they'll dress, I'm dressed as a preacher from long ago. How fun. That's neat. I like that. That's creative. Get one of those crazy, scary preacher hats, like, ooh. Carol Ann, I'm going to come on in here through the screen. Let me in the screen door. I died in a crypt under the house. La, 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 la. I don't mind being, it'd be fun a little bit being haunted by the person who used to live in the house I lived in. I've seen pictures of him, and I'm pretty sure he's dead. Not in the pictures. I wonder if he was dead when he lived here. A spirit has always lived in that house. You don't know? You don't see the old man who lives in there? What? It's crazy, scary. I don't mind. The dead are just dead, right? What can they do to me, especially since they're dead? Well, sometimes they can resurrect their corpses. They could really creep you out badly. They could, probably to death. I know that I can be creeped out or scared to death because sometimes I'll be working in the yard and somebody will sneak up on me and they'll say, Hardy, and I'll go, ah! And I'll have a moment of death, a petty death, a little one. And that happens to me, so I know what it's like to be scared so badly. Oh, don't you be scared. Are you scared? So the world is uncertain. The good thing, here's the thing. It's been uncertain for a long time. And I'm telling you, sometimes it gets uncertain in such a way that you'll think, oh, this is not survivable. And yet here you are. So somebody you were related to survived. Amazing. You may not like it. That's the thing. But you don't fall off as much as you think you do. I think a lot of times that life, just in general, not your individual life, but, you know, persistence of it, is like one of those whitewater raft things. You say people, they get thrown up in the air. Somehow they're crashing right back down on the raft. Yes, I know, but it's not a pleasant experience, but somehow like a majority of them are staying in the raft. It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing there's still biological life on this planet. Oh, it endures. Now, individuals may have a very lousy time. Understand that. Oh, how can we shape? Can you shape this museum? I'm just listening to this tour, benignly, passively. How do I shape what's on the walls in this museum? Step up to this exhibit right there. Have you noticed that there's a blank canvas right there? That's for you. That's for me. Yes, you get to do whatever you want on that blank canvas. Well, I'm no artist. Okay, that's great. Know thyself. Well, the first thing you should do is then don't make art on it. You can do something else. Anything you do, any way you want to express yourself or say anything, you want to post a ad for your business, go ahead and do it there. How fun. We get to express ourselves. Yes. And then I get to speak into the ear of the person looking at it. And you don't know what we're talking about. We could be criticizing it. We could be praising it. Oh, if only we could have access to the audio tour plastic museum ear wand of others and say, what are they hearing? What's going into their head? Help me understand their opinion of that painting by knowing what their docent has told them. What did your docent tell you about that painting?
Well, they said it's of a man.
Yes, and what else?
And notice the paint.
Notice the paint? What did you notice about the paint?
Called different colors.
Yes, the artist has used different colors. What else?
It's thick, all by the thumb.
It's thick by the man's thumb. It's the paint is thicker. What else?
Some of it doesn't look like paint. It looks like food has been smeared on there.
Very good. The artist has used other mediums. It's mixed medium. It's not just paint. You're right. I think there's cheese grits.
Right, I thought so. The belt.
The belt is cheese grits. And what else do you notice about the painting?
The bubble, the big thought bubble where the guy's going, I hate you.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's stating something. So the character is thinking, I hate you. So is he mad? Is he scared? What is he doing?
I don't know. It's too obvious.
Yes, I don't like that one. Let's move on to another painting. Let's move on to another sculpture. It doesn't have to be sculpture. Oh, we can express ourselves in so many ways just walking down the street. You are some sort of exhibit in some sort of museum. What kind of museum is it, Hardy? Tell me, what am I doing? Just walking, living your life. Look at you. You're saying something. You have a mission statement. Sometimes artists are forced, if they want money from the government or they want money from a rich person's foundation or something, are forced to write a mission statement or some sort of description of their art in a language derived from the rear ends of bovines. And so what you do is you take this and put it out there and say, yes, what I'm trying to do here is I like place. I like color and place and stuff like that. And they'll go, oh, all right, you should set tables. And then you say, well, that's what influences a lot of things. They inform my art because my art's like a little school child or something. This is what we're learning today, place. All right, how's place? Inform me.
Well, like that, you know, that building that you took a picture of because you thought it was interesting?
Yeah.
Well, that's a place, and it's informing your art.
Oh, that's okay. And color?
There was red on it.
There was red on it. I like the way there was red and blue.
Yep. So red and blue on a building, color and place, also informed by something else. What's another good word?
Oh, I don't know. Politics. What's political about it?
Well, here's what's political about it. Vote. Oh, I want you to vote for me.
Oh, my friend, what are you running for?
I know I'm not running. You didn't see me running. I'm not running. I got nothing to hide.
Oh, my goodness. I you know what? I'm dropping out of the election. I want you to vote for me. I want my old life back.
Oh, we all want a nice, quiet life. If something happens, I always say to this, if Bluto from Popeye was elected president or something, what other cartoon would you move to? A lot of people say, oh, I go to Betty Boop or whatever. Say, hey, but who's going to stay and help fix Popeye? You're leaving Popeye on his own. Say, well, I never thought of it that way. He's got spinach. Spinach, not enough. Spinach, here's the way I look. Spinach is weed legalization. Popeye are millennials, or no, some of them are veterans of the Gulf Wars. And Bluto represents the entertainment industry. Follow me now, because I've been watching a lot of Wizard of Oz. Figured I'd go, which one's Eugene Debs or whatever? Go, no, it predates that. Okay, I'm just trying to figure out. I know it's political and all.
I want to be the man made entirely out of railroad ties who represents Eugene Debs.
All right, that's great. Railroad tie man. You come with me. What is the road made of?
Debt.
Oh, a whole road made of debt. I don't know how they would do that. What represents that?
Nuts.
All right. Nut, debt nuts. Oh, I see. Is that a type of thing?
I got bad debt nuts.
Yeah, it's a condition. It'd be nice not to owe any money. I know I still owe money. And that's the one thing about dying. It makes dying easier for people. Say, well, you know, hopefully I won't have to pay off my debt after I die. The Egyptians went crazy about that. They're like, man, die debt. You got to die debt free because there's nothing worse than getting hounded by creditors in your grave. I'm trying to enjoy my jarred viscera and my mummified cat and other things down here. I got an ankh. And you're calling me night and day about, oh, blah, blah, blah. You owe me so and so many shmakma or whatever they are in Egypt. I wish I knew more history. You know what I think? I blame the Time Life books didn't make a good transition, I don't think, to the internet, did they? Because I can't see. As it used to be easy. I'd say something would happen, and I'd reach for one of my Time Life books and say, okay, ghosts, saints that awful things happen to or something, or ghosts, or I don't know which ones, the presidents. And I'd reach for one of those books, and I'd pull it out, and it would have all the information that I thought that I needed to know right there. And that was a wonderful delusion, how small the world was. I remember getting things, the President of the United States magazine or something, and say all the presidents were right there. It just all made some sort of sense, you know, that they all looked kind of identical. Didn't occur to me, and I didn't read the individual histories to see the degrees of awfulness or anything, but I looked at it and just all made sense. That's the way things are, and I don't know if I questioned it. And then one day I said, was there even a George Filmon or whatever? And there wasn't, but that was my mistake. But then I said, was there even a Buchanan? And it turns out there were, so I knew I'd go a little too far with the doubting, and I had to find someplace just to doubt right in the middle. So, yes, there was, but, you know, he didn't have a spaceship or whatever the current wisdom is. Oh, the current wisdom. How can it be wisdom? Is that even an expression? Now I might be making fun of something that's not even an expression. I've done that. This is why I would not be good with observational humor. They always say that. They say, you're the Mr. Magoo of observational humor. I go, what are you talking about? I go, you're ragging on that short man over there, but it's really a fire hydrant. Oh, okay. That's why nobody finds my short people jokes funny, because they say, oh, why those hard bolts in their ears? Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Never mind. It's my perception is off, and I'm misinterpreting it. I'm thinking that you don't understand me, but I don't understand me. That's the problem.
Oh, if we could all see our own faults clearly. I can. You know, I can. And you say, well, why are you on the radio? Arrogance, I guess. It's a hostile act. That's the thing, too. Yeah, a lot of times you'll realize with entertainers, you say, boy, that takes a lot of confidence or gumption or gall or something. Yes, I know, chutzpah. Yes, thank you. It does a certain, you know, not caring what people think is a two-edged sword. You know, because say, well, you know, you want to go out there, put yourself out there possibly. You say, I don't want to care what people think. Well, not caring what people think also could entail not caring about people, right? So I don't care what people think. I'm going to drop my garbage here and poke this youngster in the eye. Yeah, you going to do that? Yeah, I'm going to poke him in the eye. Ow.
All right. We're going to roll now. Mo is going to poke somebody in the eye. So we're going to do that. Go ahead. Eye poke sound. All right, now, we're thinking it's going to be a younger person. So if I could get just a higher sound, it's a small young person who's poking the eye. Go ahead. All right, beautiful. Now Mo is poking somebody bigger in the eye. Do it. Let's do another. Somebody even bigger. Okay, pokes him in the eye. Now he's poking Cyclops, giant with just one eye. There you go.
All right, well, now the sound effects of eye poking. That would make a beautiful presentation. If you do, I got to do a class for Shavuot or something. Okay, do that one. Teach everybody that. That'll be a beautiful thing. You know, the sounds that we hear on the radio, often called Foley or Foley, are an art in and of themselves. You know, you think, oh, I just grab my cheek and go, and that's the sound of somebody slapping a steak. Yes, but it's more than that. Like, there's all sorts of, you know, last week I did whittling. Say, oh, it sounded just like whittling. Thank you. That took a long time to get right. And I've got wood chips all over the place. But yes, we take a lot of times getting the sound effects right. And I think that a lot of times the words that are coming out of my mouth are a sort of sound effect. They might be the equivalent of gentle rain. Sometimes I find it difficult to sleep, and so I will put headphones in, earbuds, and I have a phone, and it's got a app on it for different rain sounds. I used to listen to white noise, static, and imagine it's rain. But this is really nice, sophisticated rain sounds. You can adjust the way the rain sounds. Oh, this is raining on a, you know, deck, an unfinished deck. It's raining on an umbrella, slightly bigger umbrella. And you can just tune it a little bit. Thunder, not so much thunder. Distant screams is comforting to some people. And so I have, you know, you're dialing in, shh, like that, and it's a sound effect, a little background. And your imagination begins to soar, gives flight to the imagery in your head, doesn't it? You say, all of a sudden, I can imagine maybe I'm in a little comfortable little cave, a little fort or something. I feel my world is smaller. I can get a little handle on it now. It's shrunk. And the rain represents this sort of chaos on the outside with the world right now requires nothing of me. It has to slow down. When it starts to rain, when it starts to storm, I know also my predators are slowed down. They've gone back in their caves as well. And we can all regroup. Sometimes I need to retreat into that rainy cave of my head and find again the essence of my existence. Who am I? Why am I here? It's a self-guided tour. I have to hold something up to my ear. I got to get a little information, but then I got to decide for myself. Is that really a painting of a man? Or is that some sort of scary face I'm just seeing in a rock because I want it to be a face? Because I feel lost and lonely. I see the image of eyes, a nose, a mouth. There ain't nothing like a dame. I wish my voice got even lower. Because I think there's so many things I could do. Ads for pills or something serious. You know, I think that that
resonance people
respond to. Not so much a high nasal. I wonder if you could do that. Now, Ralph Stanley just passed away, and I was thinking about all the kind of high lonesome voices, Roscoe Holcomb, Dillard Chandler, Priscilla Wallen, you know, and that kind of high lonesome.
Oh, could you advertise, take a pill?
Like they could advertise from mountain to mountain. With that beautiful, loud voice. I wonder if I could speak to you like that. I will. Next time I appear, I'm going to speak to you like this. A little loud for the room. No microphone needed. I will sing in mountain ballad volume. Isn't that beautiful? It's not as intimate as microphone. This, I'm right there. If you have an earbud in, and you're like, oh, man, Hardy's mouth is close to my ear. I know. Is it making you nervous? It's a good thing I'm not real. This would be... Ugh, did you brush? What should I be smelling? Mint. Only mint. Unless you don't like mint. And then lemon balm. That could be nice. It just smells like a garden. My mouth. Because that's what I've been eating. I've been out there eating flowers. And living in a hole in the ground. I don't know who I am anymore. Oh, do you know who you are? I hope that you don't have too much of an idea. Leave it open. A bit. So, you know, I can see you having to have an identity when you go to parties. You got to write something on a name tag. But, you know, when it's just between you, me, and the fence post, which is so fun. I love Fence Post Club. Then don't worry about it. You can be a bunch of things in your head, can't you? Oh, my friend, I want your heart to be quiet. I want you to not feel rage and anger. That's what I want. You know, I know a lot of times, who are you speaking to? Are you speaking to people who feel like victims? Maybe. Are you speaking like people who victimize? Maybe I am. Maybe I'm saying I give you permission to no longer be that way. Oh, calm down, my friend. Oh, you don't have to get back at this. Just you don't have to get back at life. You can end your vengeful quest for justice. It's all silly nonsense. Just relax. Smell them flowers. Smell artificial flowers like I suggest. And it's so good to be together with you, my friend. What are you doing now? What? Well, I'm just asking, are you listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, or online at WFMU.org? It's so good to be with you, and I hope to see you again next week, my friends.
know that I've been saved. Jesus filled my soul with the Holy Ghost. Things I used to do, I don't do no more, no. Places I used to go, I don't go no more. Friends I used to have, friends that I used to have, friends that I used to have, yeah. I've been saying yeah, I've been saying yeah. Jesus saved me one day, oh yes he did, oh yes he did. He saved my soul. I don't know about you children, but he saved my soul. I don't know about you deacon, but he saved my soul. I don't know about you, yeah, but he saved my soul. He saved my soul. He saved my soul. I've been saying yeah, yeah. I've been saying yeah. I've been saying yeah. He saved me. He saved me. He saved me, yeah. I got a song I love to sing so well, children. And I sing this particular song everywhere I go.
Oh, yeah.
This song I'm about to sing right now is a part of my testimony. And it seems like everywhere I go, I sing this old very song. Because I know I have made a change in my life. And the song that I want to sing, it goes something like this.
Have made a change. The flying clouds of joy have made a change, letting us know right there. Here on Sinners Crossroads on WFMU. Yes, sir. Courtesy of the Halo record label. 65 or 66 on that. Right before that, we also heard another Halo gospel record, The Gospel Souls, and I've Been Saved. That's what they were singing about. The Gospel Souls and the Flying Clouds of Joy, courtesy of the Halo record label, and courtesy of a brand new 2LP reissue on Secret Stash. And they've been going through the wonderful soul record label, O-N-E-Durful. Get it? Halo was a subsidiary of that, recording some great soul gospel stuff in the mid-60s, the Salem Travelers, Redemption Harmonizers, Daytonians, and those yellow label gospel records have been good ones to have over the years, and so it's good to have this overview and a double fold set. and we'll be playing liberally in the good way from that this evening. But we started the program there with two unreleased cuts from this set, and I believe there's 9 in total from Secret Stash Records reissuing a Halo Gospel, mid-60s Halo Gospel. We're glad they did. There's not enough of them. Here on Church Crossroads on WFMU. My name is Kevin Nutt, and stay tuned for the next 50 minutes for some more Halo Gospel and other goodies. Rightly so. Most shows, we debut records. I think everything we're playing tonight is new for Sinner's Crossroads, and some good ones. But we'll keep with the Halo vibe and the Halo tradition, and we'll start the next set with the Redemption Harmonizers, another previously unreleased track from Halo, courtesy of the Secret Stash record label. Fine folks there. Intriguingly titled, The Modern Messiah by the Redemption Harmonizers.